Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Plastic pollution has become one of the most pressing issues of our time. Most of our everyday products are made of plastic, but many of us use these products without thinking about or knowing how they are produced or where they end up. Here are some figures about how much plastic is produced and how much is wasted. 1 million plastic bottles are bought around the world every minute, according to Beyond Plastics, a nationwide project based at Bennington College in Bennington, Vermont, whose mission is to end plastic pollution. Companies produce over 380 million tons of plastic every year. Up to 50% of that is for single-use purposes. It is estimated that more than 10 million tons of plastic is dumped into our oceans every year. Those plastic products break down into tiny particles that impact wildlife and the ocean's ability to store carbon. The chemicals in those plastics have been found in humans, and they're linked to a range of reproductive health problems. A recent study by Australia's Minderoo Foundation found that 20 companies are responsible for 55% of the world's single-use plastic waste. ExxonMobil tops the list, contributing a whopping 5.9 million metric tons to global plastic waste, followed closely by the U.S. chemical company Dow and China's Sinopec. The study says 100 companies are the source of 90% of global single-use plastic production. A recent explosive undercover interview with one of ExxonMobil's top lobbyists revealed that Exxon uses the same delay and distract tactics with plastic pollution as they do with the climate crisis. According to Unearthed, Exxon works with groups including the American Chemistry Council to influence policy on forever chemicals and plastic waste. Well, joining us to talk about all of this is Judith Enck, a visiting professor at Bennington College and the president of Beyond Plastics. Professor Enck is a former EPA regional administrator who was appointed by former President Obama. Hi, Professor Enck. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Please call me Judith. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Will do. Thank you, Judith. Well, before we dive in and talk about this new study, I want to ask you about where we are today, because we cover this issue on a regular basis. And it feels like we're not making a dent, even though this is getting so much more attention by scientists, environmentalists. So many great organizations are working on this. What are your thoughts? Based on the data that's come out, are we making a dent on this crisis?
Well, if you just look at the sheer physicality of it, how much plastic is being generated every day, how much is being exported to countries that don't have a plastic recycling infrastructure, the incredible connection to climate change, I would say things are pretty grim. The flip side of that is there is growing public awareness, and there are finally some serious policy proposals. For instance, in Congress, there's a comprehensive bill called the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act that we can talk about that's been proposed. And I think, you know, I'm a big believer in when the people lead, the leaders will follow. I think the public has very serious concerns here. And there's always a delay, right? You identify a problem, the media covers it, the scientists do their work, and then there's a long delay from when we get policy change. And that's namely because of the influence of special interests. You mentioned the expose with Exxon. Oh my gosh, that was so familiar. And so that's kind of the political reality we're dealing with. When we're just dealing with science, I'm optimistic. When you are dealing with the political science on all of this, I'm a little worried.
Well, and to your point, if we can just drill right down to what we're dealing with, we're talking about billions of dollars in profits here for these corporations. And they know what's at stake if governments really tackle this crisis. And I was just reminded of a piece I read in the New York Times, and I'm so glad I was able to find it. August 30th, 2020. The headline says it all. Big oil is in trouble. Its plan, flood Africa with plastic. Faced with plunging profits and a climate crisis that threatens fossil fuels, the industry is demanding a trade deal that weakens Kenya's rules on plastics and on import American trash. So, can you talk about that? We're talking about billions of dollars in profits from these companies. I mean, that's what is really at stake here.
Absolutely. So what's happening is as our world finally transitions away from fossil fuel for electricity and for transportation, those are the two major uses of fossil fuels. So on the electricity sector, we're finally moving more seriously on energy efficiency and clean renewables like solar and wind and geothermal. On the transportation sector, we're seeing a tremendous uptick in the use of electric vehicles, electrifying truck fleets and ships. So not long ago, our friends in the petrochemical industry, I use the word friends loosely, they had a bunch of meetings behind closed doors and decided plan B to save the fossil fuel industry is to make major new investments in plastic production. So they started investing in facilities that most Americans have probably never heard of. They're called ethane cracker facilities. So traditionally, plastic was made from chemicals and oil. Now it's mostly made from chemicals and ethane, a waste product of fracking. So what we see unfolding in states like Louisiana, Texas, Pennsylvania, Ohio, is companies, namely fossil fuel companies, are capturing this fracked gas, this waste gas, building new pipelines and sending them to multi-billion dollar facilities called ethane cracker facilities, where they heat the gas at high temperature and it cracks, thus the name cracker. And it's used to create single-use plastic packaging. These multi-billion dollar facilities are being built in low-income communities of color to make the ingredients for things like plastic bottles, plastic bags, polystyrene foam. This is all happening behind the curtain. Unfortunately, it's happening with government support. The first big ethane cracker coming online in this country will be this year, built by Shell in Pennsylvania, just outside of Pittsburgh. And the state of Pennsylvania gave them financial incentives. A Democratic governor gave them financial incentives to build this. At the federal level, we see legislation like the Clean Future Act proposed by Congressmembers Pallone and Tonko claiming to be about clean energy, but it includes federal tax credits to build garbage incinerators. So there's this incredible disconnect between our environmental concerns and how our policymakers are acting.
I have not heard about what's going on in Pennsylvania. Can you tell us more about that? It's an ethane cracker plant?
Yes, it's an ethane cracker plant proposed, and it's under construction. It's going to start operating this year. It's about 25 miles from Pittsburgh. Pennsylvania is a state that has a lot of hydrofracking. And so they're capturing the ethane gas. They built this multi-billion dollar facility, and they will be cranking out material to make single-use plastic packaging. And it's, you know, it's the first to come online, but you should also be aware of a facility proposed in Louisiana called Formosa. It's a company based in Taiwan. They are trying to site an ethane cracker in St. James County, Louisiana. If it comes online, it will be the largest new source of carbon emissions in the entire country. So these ethane crackers pose a risk to almost always low-income communities, communities of color, right where the facility is located, but also It's essential that people know that these ethane cracker facilities are super emitters of carbon. So for instance, a greenhouse gas. So if plastic production use and grows as currently planned, and you have these multiple ethane cracker facilities operating, by 2030, the emissions of carbon will be about the same emissions that you would get from 295 new coal-fired power plants. Wow. So as we are working to shut down coal plants because of their carbon emissions and how they contribute to climate change, why in the world would we be wanting to replace those carbon emissions with emissions from ethane cracker plants just to make cheap plastic?
I just found a couple articles about this ethane cracker plant in Pennsylvania. So this is a $6 billion complex. It's again from Royal Dutch Shell. And so that one, COVID put it on hold, but it is resuming. There's some reporting coming out of Pennsylvania about that. And then you mentioned the Formosa Plastics plant. We did do a show about that one. This is a $9.4 billion petrochemical complex on the banks of the Mississippi River in St. James, Louisiana. And this is right near Cancer Alley, where so many people, low income, mostly people of color, are dealing with cancer.
Yeah, it's astonishing that we all use the phrase Cancer Alley. It's been normalized.
Right.
And these are communities of color that are so overburdened with pollution that they have very high cancer rates, and they're almost sacrifice zones. You know, we've got a lot of polluting facilities there, so let's add some more. And unfortunately, the state of Louisiana puts out the red carpet. Thankfully, there are really smart community people opposing this. People like Sharon Levine with Rise St. James, who just won the Goldman Environmental Prize. She and her neighbors are putting up, you know, quite the fight on Formosa. And I'm not optimistic that the state of Louisiana will do much to stop the Formosa plant. But I think this is gut check time for the Biden administration and Kamala Harris's administration. There are some important federal permits that need to be granted for this facility, specifically the Army Corps of Engineers, which hands out permits to destroy wetlands, has put their permit approval on hold until they get more information. So this is an avenue for the Biden administration to really make a statement about how serious are they about environmental justice and also stopping plastic pollution. So all eyes are on the new Biden administration. They've put out some truly inspired policies and positions on environmental justice. I think President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris really get it, that your health should not be dictated by your zip code. But is that commitment to environmental justice going to be on display when their agencies make decisions on whether or not polluting facilities like Formosa can go forward? Many people don't understand the climate change plastic production nexus, but the Biden administration certainly does.
Well, as you said, Pennsylvania has a Democratic governor. Same with Louisiana. They're both Democrats. So if they're on board with these massive projects, what could the Biden administration do?
Well, you know, from my experience at EPA, I can share that many of the federal environmental laws are delegated to the states. So you have the Pennsylvania Environmental Agency or the Louisiana Environmental Agency making the lion's share of the permitting decisions. However, there are some federal decisions that have to be made. Notably, as I mentioned, the Army Corps of Engineers. A lot of people don't realize that one of their roles is, in conjunction with EPA, they decide whether or not to issue permits to allow wetlands to essentially be destroyed. And the Army Corps of Engineers has put that decision on hold. And it's my great hope that they are consulting with the new leadership in the federal government and making a decision on whether or not those valuable wetlands should be plowed over or not. You know, the other thing is the president and the vice president can use the bully pulpit. Do we want to endanger the health of a low-income community of color in Louisiana so a Taiwanese company can make billions of dollars making cheap plastic? I think that's not a very hard policy choice for the Biden administration to make. And we're waiting to see if they are going to play a role. This is the perfect time for the president to illustrate where he stands on environmental justice in terms of whether or not he allows the Formosa facility to go forward. Now, of course, there are dozens of other ethane cracker facilities. By my last count, there are 46 facilities in permitting in different stages of approval, mostly in the Gulf states, but also Ohio and Pennsylvania. And so, you know, it's my great hope that the Biden administration takes a stand and rejects the Formosa permits, but they also need to look much more broadly at the issue of how plastic production contributes to climate change. It's so important to drive down greenhouse gas emissions from power plants and transportation, but those improvements can get canceled out with new petrochemical facilities coming online as the petrochemical industry wants to do.
Today, we are talking about the plastic pollution crisis with Judith Ank, a visiting professor at Bennington College and the president of Beyond Plastics, a nationwide project whose mission is to end plastic pollution. Professor Ank is a former EPA regional administrator appointed by former President Obama. If you have any questions for Judith about this crisis, she comes at this with a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge, given that she is a former EPA regional administrator. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Judith, we'll talk about how plastic production contributes to climate change in a minute. But given your background at the EPA, I just want to ask you about the power of lobbying and these massive, massive corporations. Because the Minderoo Foundation's report, No Plastic Waste, also focuses on the major global investors and banks that are enabling this crisis. They say that 20 institutional asset managers led by U.S. companies Vanguard Group, BlackRock, and Capital Group hold over $300 billion worth of shares in the parent companies of these polymer producers. And polymer, of course, is the product that makes the single-use plastics, and we'll talk about that in a minute. They also name Barclays, HSBC, Bank of America. And then what we learned in that explosive Exxon interview is that lobbyists actually came out and said that they talked to Senator Joe Manchin on a weekly basis. I mean, on a weekly basis. So can you just talk about that issue here? Because money in politics is such a problem, and these companies have so much power over politicians.
You put your finger on it. It is an enormous problem. And I listened with interest to those Exxon interviews, and boy, they were familiar. A lot of the tactics used on the climate change issue are now being used on the plastic issue. And the goal is just to delay action. This is the part of the issue that I'm least optimistic about, and that is the role of special interests in decision making. And it's not just in Congress, it's also in state legislatures and in city councils. When I show up to support, for instance, a policy that Beyond Plastics is a proponent of, we call it the Plastic Trifecta. It's a very modest local bill that would ban plastic bags, put a fee on paper bags, ban polystyrene food packaging, and you only get plastic straws if you ask for one. Very modest bill. And often local residents will rally around it. And at the public hearings, we are treated to testimony by representatives of the chemical industry. Luckily, they're often a little clueless, and they start their testimony by saying, "I just flew in from Washington." And then they don't tell the truth. They say things like polystyrene should not be banned. It can be recycled. Well, for the past 40 years, they've been saying that. And the polystyrene recycling rate is less than 0.25%. So they're not held to the same standards. They have a lot of access. They make campaign contributions. And I don't think our political system is really set up to deal with the science of the issue when the process is so polluted by special interest politics. The newest thing we're seeing is, just as lawmakers are recognizing that plastic pollution is a serious problem and they need to do something about it, for years we heard from the plastics industry that the solution is recycling. Well, plastic recycling has been an abysmal failure compared to other materials in particular. So if you look at the recycling rate for paper and cardboard, it's 66%. The recycling rate for glass is 27%. But the recycling rate for plastics is an abysmal 8.5%. Finally, the industry is recognizing that there are 30 years of public relations of telling people, don't worry about your consumption of single-use plastics, just toss it in the recycling bin. They're finally recognizing that they can't get away with that anymore because of the low recycling rates. So now they're pushing something called chemical recycling, where you basically take all waste plastic, number 1 through 7, don't do any source separating, send it to a facility where it's heated at high temperature, and theoretically it becomes fuel. It rarely becomes new plastic material. It is a bit of a boondoggle. Most of these facilities that are announced never get built. And yet the American Chemistry Council is in almost every state legislature pushing through bills to promote a false solution called chemical recycling or gasification or pyrolysis. So that's the next thing we need to be on our toes about. But they are very influential in the Congress. And the only way we counter that is by having scores of people all over the country getting smart about the plastic issue and becoming citizen lobbyists and informing legislators on what they know to be true, and sharing peer-reviewed science, and try to move the policy debate more toward waste reduction, an economy based on refilling and reusing, and then legitimate recycling, not plastic recycling, which is mostly smoke and mirrors.
The Intercept, Sharon Lerner, had an amazing piece about a year ago, and she wrote about how legislation at the state levels would make it illegal for local governments to ban or restrict bags or other single-use plastic products. And this is all coming from all of the companies that we've been mentioning on today's show.
Yes. I mean, Sharon Lerner has done brilliant reporting on the plastics issues, and people interested should read all of her stories. What the American Chemistry Council and others are doing is they see hundreds of local laws being introduced at the local level to reduce plastic pollution. So in a number of states, they've gone to the state legislatures and the governor to get them to preempt local government from taking action. So, for instance, in Texas, you cannot pass a local law that would ban plastic bags, for instance. So much for local control. It's a shrewd move by the plastics industry because they see this tsunami of interest among ordinary citizens who see plastic pollution in their parks, on their beaches, in their neighborhoods, and they want to do something about it. And it's easier to access your city council than it is to access Congress, for instance. So the petrochemical industry saw this explosion of local laws, so they raced to state legislatures and got a number of bills adopted that would prevent local governments from regulating in this arena. It's really unfortunate. It is shrewd. And I think it just makes local residents want to fight even harder. You know, I work a lot on climate change. It's obviously linked to plastic pollution. But you would think the plastic issue would be a little easier to tackle, because while I've met many climate change deniers, I've never met a plastic pollution denier, because you go out in your neighborhood and you see plastic bags in the tree, you see plastic water bottles in your parks. People know there's a problem. And we just need to make sure that there's a massive citizen organizing effort to counter the extraordinary political influence of the petrochemical industry.
We're going to take a quick break. Today, we're joined by Judith Enck, a visiting professor at Bennington College and the president of Beyond Plastics. This is a group whose mission is to end plastic pollution. Judith Enck is a former EPA regional administrator appointed by former President Obama. 1 million plastic bottles are bought around the world every minute. There is a new study out by Australia's Mindaroo Foundation that found 20 companies are responsible for 55% of the world's single-use plastic waste. ExxonMobil tops the list, followed by U.S. chemical company Dow and China's Sinopec. After a break, we'll talk more about that study and we'll continue discussing solutions. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the plastic pollution crisis with Judith Enck, a visiting professor at Bennington College and president of Beyond Plastics. Judith Enck is a former EPA regional administrator who was appointed by former President Obama. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at Your Call Radio. Let's hear from a few listeners. Let's go to Robert in Daly City. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for letting me speak. I have a question and then a suggestion, more or less, or you might call it two questions. One is, would the larger proliferation of plastic recycling plants actually be of help? And if it were to be of help, why would it not be a target for growing industrial nations, countries mired in poverty, that would do anything to have a location where they can provide jobs to their population, securing their own positions, political positions in the future?
All right. Thank you for that. What are your thoughts, Judith?
Well, I'm a big supporter of recycling. I started my town's recycling program, but I'm afraid that we cannot recycle our way out of the plastic pollution crisis. The plastics recycling rate is only 8.5%. And if you look at the bottom of your plastic container, there are these tiny little numbers inside chasing arrows. Number one and number two plastics are really the only material that gets recycled. The rest of them, there's just no market for. And part of that is because big consumer brand companies like Johnson & Johnson and Starbucks and McDonald's are mostly using virgin plastics. They're not using recycled plastics. A lot of plastics that we cannot recycle get exported to other countries. And, you know, for years, half of our recyclables were sent to China. But China said repeatedly, you're sending us too much mixed municipal waste in with your recyclables. And if you keep doing it, we're going to close our doors to you. And that's what they did. And so the U.S. and Europe's plastic has been sent to countries like Vietnam, the Philippines, and now Africa. And these are countries that do not have solid waste infrastructure set up. And also, they also don't have markets for plastics to be recycled. So, you know, I would urge your listeners to take a look at this fabulous movie called The Story of Plastic, which is put out by a Bay Area group called The Story of Stuff, and get a look at what happens when we export our plastic waste to other countries. It's really quite unconscionable. So while there is some limited plastic recycling going on, I think the systemic solution here is to shift to reusable and refillable packaging. And if that's not possible, then to shift to other materials that can be made from recycled content, things like cardboard and paper and glass and metal. When that material is recycled, it's often recycled into the same thing, like an aluminum can be recycled into aluminum can. Whereas when you do have the rare success of recycling plastic, it's almost always recycled into other products or downcycled. So a plastic container is recycled into clothing or decking material. It's not recycled into another plastic container. So, you know, I teach a class on plastic pollution. I now teach it online. People can go to our website, beyondplastics.org, and sign up for the class. The next one starts September 1st. And it's mostly students, but it's also a lot of community people auditing the class. And I almost feel like I'm telling everyone there's no Santa Claus when I say that recycling is not the way out of this problem, because people want to be part of the solution. The public likes to recycle, especially if we make it convenient for them. But recycling, because of the nature of the material and because of the lack of companies like Coke and Pepsi and Starbucks not using more recycled material, recycling is just not our way out of this dilemma.
Well, and again, documents show that industry officials knew about all of this as far back as the 1970s. NPR and Frontline did an investigation last year showing the same patterns of lies and distractions about recycling. Larry Thomas, former president of the Society of the Plastics Industry, one of the industry's most powerful trade groups in DC, said, quote, "If the public thinks that recycling is working, then they are not going to be as concerned about the environment."
Absolutely. And it's so similar to the fossil fuel story and climate change. The producers of plastic knew that they were never going to achieve high recycling rates. And yet they spent millions of dollars trying to fool the public into thinking if you just tossed your plastics into your recycling bin, you have nothing to worry about. So the good news is that the big lie has been exposed, and smart policymakers realize that they've been misled by the plastics industry. And now there needs to be a dramatic shift in policy. The other thing that is new is finally recognizing the plastic production climate change nexus. People have been concerned about plastic because of the impact in the ocean, the impact on marine life, concerns about plastic possibly leaching into food and beverage packaging. Everyone knows that these polluting petrochemical facilities are almost always cited in environmental justice communities. So there's a litany of problems. And what's so maddening is that we don't need a moonshot solution. The solution is right before us. People born before World War II had a world without plastic. You know, when I went to school, elementary school and high school, in the cafeteria, we were served on real dishes. And someone had a job running the dishwashing equipment. You know, now most schools have single-use disposable plastic packaging because it's cheap. The challenge here is that there's no silver bullet. There are multiple strategies we can do to reduce plastics. But what we really need is comprehensive laws at the state and federal level to reduce plastic production and use. Because just going individual by individual, company by company, is not getting the job done. And we don't have enough time to do that. We need systemic change.
Well, thank you for the phone call, Robert. Let's go next to Scott in San Francisco. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I just had one quick question. You know, it's my understanding that a couple of nations in Europe are not only 100% non-producers of recycling, but they actually take on they're negative because they take on other countries' recycling needs. I don't know if this is something that you can comment on, and if so, is there anything that we can learn from what they're doing right?
Well, thank you. In Europe, just last week, a policy for the entire EU took effect, banning 10 or 12 different types of plastic packaging that are often the source of litter. Things like plastic water bottles, plastic utensils, plastic Q-tips. Remember when you would use a Q-tip and the cotton swabs are held together by cardboard? Now it's plastic. So Europe has a fairly progressive policy reducing a lot of single-use plastic. I was not familiar with your point that they are importing a lot of plastic for recycling, because I do know that they match the United States on exporting plastics to Asia and to Africa because they don't have plastic recycling markets in Europe.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Scott. Let's next go to Siva in San Mateo. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is such a wonderful topic and so close to my heart, as when I throw away things, I don't know what to do with them, really, because there's a mixture of plastic and paper. So, two questions. One, is there a way to, like plastic bags, could it be used just in some kind of a building material where nothing has to be done and it is used like insulation? That's one question. Is it? And the other question is, if the companies that make the, for example, the plastic bags, they were required to take them back. Mm-hmm. And is there actually a way to take plastic bags and somehow, without polluting, to for them to be reused, and the material just reused?
Yeah, good points. I think reusable bags are definitely the way to go. Excuse me. I'm not sure about the insulation idea, but reuse is the future.
Go ahead and take a drink, and we'll take our next caller. Thank you for that, Siva. And if Judith has anything else to say, when she takes a drink, we'll get another comment. Let's go to Louise in San Rafael. Hi, Louise. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having this great program. And I want to announce next Tuesday, July 20th in San Francisco, we're going to hold a big plastic awareness, plastic Free July rally at 333 Bush Street in San Francisco, which is outside the building. Our Senator Padilla, it has an office. We would love everyone to come out at 2 o'clock. I have sent a flyer to your station. Hopefully you can put it there so that people can get more information. but it's at 2 o'clock, July 20th, just to do with wonderful Judith has just been speaking about, and I want to put a plug in for Beyond Plastic. Not only are they a great organization, but they are the ones that help with the flyer. So please come out. Everything Judith has said is so critically important. Please come out, support it, bring signs, bring a message in a used plastic bottle, and come out. Everyone, anywhere in the Bay Area can get there, all ages, kids too. So please come out and support it. This is really urgent. We really need the support. We need the awareness. July 20th, 2 p.m. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much. And that's at 333 Bush Street in San Francisco. Judith, people who attend that rally are going to push legislators to support the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. Can you tell us what that would do?
Absolutely. And apologies for my voice.
No problem.
My first cold in a year and a half. Well, what was just described is happening all over the country, and it's very exciting. People are rallying around a bill called the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. And in fact, the House sponsor, Representative Lowenthal, is from from the LA area. And what this bill does is it prohibits the construction of new petrochemical facilities like ethane crackers for 3 years. We need a pause for EPA to really get a handle on this pollution. It also establishes a national bottle bill, deposits on beverage containers. It bans plastic bags. It directs the EPA to do something called extended producer responsibility, which is what one of your callers mentioned, making the companies that produce the packaging take financial responsibility for disposal. It bans polystyrene. There are many, many elements to this wonderful bill. And I just want to share the bill numbers. It's Senate Bill 984, House Bill 2238. It is vigorously opposed by the American Chemistry Council and the fossil fuel industry. So this is quite the organizing effort ahead of us to get parts or all of this bill adopted. But this rally in San Francisco is exactly what we need to call public attention to this bill and to the issue.
Well, Louise, thank you again for letting us know about this rally and these bills, and we will put links at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Rich and Ben Lomond. Hi, Rich. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I was born in the late 40s, and I remember in the 50s, they had the milkman came around every day to pick up the empty bottles and reuse them, and he would come back the next day with them full. If you wanted a soft drink, of course, I don't approve of soft drinks because of sugar, but they had you had to pay a deposit, and they reused the bottles. And I remember in 1971, I worked briefly in a liquor store. They had cardboard containers that held the beer. It was plastic-coated so they would last a long time, and you recycled the beer bottles and with the deposit, of course. Nowadays, and they didn't call it recycling. Now we have recycling, and they throw everything away, melt it down, use a lot of fossil fuel, and then they call it recycling. And it seems a real backward way to do things. But I would just remember very well the milkman, and I don't see why we can't go back to that. And I would like to say one more thing. I was involved in the building trades at one time, and they have this fiberglass they make insulation out of. They don't use something like cardboard that's already been made because they say, well, it's a fire hazard. Well, maybe so, but so is the siding and everything else. So, I'm very much appalled at all this plastic and stuff in the environment. And I seems like it would be easy to go back to the way things were, especially with insulation. The amount of cardboard they throw away when they could use it for insulation is...
Thank you. Thank you so much for the call, Rich. We're almost out of time. I want to make sure we get in our other callers. Let's go to Graham in Oakland. Hi, Graham. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. President Joe Biden was known for a long time as the senator from Dow DuPont. how can we realistically expect, or should we be able to realistically expect him to change his tune and finally start pushing back on the people who've held him aloft as a politician for several decades with massive campaign contributions? And what is the recipe for breaking the death grip via campaign contributions that the plastics and petroleum industry has on everybody in the political class? Thank you.
Oh, that little thing. Yes, President Biden is from Delaware. And, you know, it's hard to disagree with the caller. The petrochemical industry does have a death grip on Washington, D.C. And the only counter is for the public to organize and to try to be a counterbalance. What I think is different this time around is President Biden has spoken very sincerely and comprehensively about his concerns about environmental justice. And if you are concerned about environmental justice, you simply cannot allow situations like what we see in, quote, Cancer Alley in Louisiana to continue. You can't allow the federal government to approve the Formosa plastic plant. You can't allow the Pennsylvania Shell plant to emit over 2 million tons of CO2 every year. I can repeat local statistic after local statistic about how plastic pollution is contributing to climate change and local air toxics problems. So this is a real inflection point for the president. Does he stand up for the people who live in these environmental justice communities? And does he view this through the lens of climate change? Or does he go along with what Dow and DuPont and ExxonMobil want? I am working hard to make sure he does the first and not the latter. And the nice thing about the plastics issue is people can get involved locally. You know, you don't have to go to Washington. You can go to the rally that was announced that's happening in San Francisco next week. July is Plastic Free July. And what gives me great hope is the number of people, including callers today and students, who understand this issue and know that it's not a matter of individual choice. I mean, it's terrific if you can avoid plastic. I try, but I don't always succeed. If you shop in an American supermarket, it's impossible to avoid plastic. So those personal actions are important, but taking that concern and being an active member of our democracy at the local, state, and national level is what is going to turn the tide. I think the public is really aware of this issue, and we just need to translate that concern into political action.
Well, it's clear because every time we do a show about plastic, we get so many phone calls and so many emails. Carol writes that she just started a prescription and was appalled to get a 3-month supply in a plastic bottle that could accommodate 2 years worth of tiny pills. And then Paul writes that he gets a newspaper delivered and they're delivered in plastic bags 365 days a year. The San Francisco Chronicle and the New York Times. And yeah. I have called both to say, can you please deliver the paper just by itself, not in plastic bags? And they say it's not right. Possible.
Well, it is possible because I had the same conversation with my local newspaper, the Albany Times Union, and they now only deliver when in plastic bags when it's raining, which helps a lot. So there's a lot of those individual actions, but systemic change is what we need. You know, we need extended producer responsibility laws that say newspapers should not be delivered in plastic bags because it's really hard to pick things off one by one. And I've had the benefit of being in conversation with companies that I'm trying to convince to move away from plastic. And it always comes back to one thing. They say, yes, Judith, the alternative you laid out is practical, but for instance, it costs 0.5 cents more per package. And my reaction is, great, only a half a cent more. Let's make the switch away from plastic. And their reaction is, we're not going to make a change if we have to pay a half a cent more for alternatives to plastics. And so companies are making decisions entirely based on their own economics and not looking at what their packaging is doing to the planet and also to their local communities. You cannot escape plastic pollution at your beach, at your park, on a stroll around the neighborhood. So that's why we need laws that are strictly enforced, and we need an international treaty to drive down the production and use of plastic. And I think that's another important priority for the Biden administration.
Well, that's what this study from the Mindaroo Foundation said, that we need some sort of Paris Agreement style treaty. That may be the only way to bring an end to plastic pollution, because they point out that 30% of the single use sector is state owned, with Saudi Arabia, China, and the United Arab Emirates topping within the top three. So obviously, in addition to what needs to happen in the United States, there needs to be also some sort of global treaty.
Yes, and that feels like it's hard for citizens to influence. But, you know, I did talk to representatives of the State Department recently about the need for a global treaty. Hmm. And I have to say, I was not impressed with their comments and what direction they plan to take. And so that's when you have to go to your U.S. senators and your House members and say, you tell the State Department we need a global treaty. The chemical and fossil fuel industry lobbyists are all over this. They probably would support a global treaty if it was like Swiss cheese, just filled with holes. Right. And that's almost worse than the status quo, because there's the perception that something is being done. But we need to reduce the demand of plastic in the United States, but be mindful that a lot of the production, a lot of the polymers are shipped to other countries. And as you mentioned, there are state actors involved. So, well, I can't think of anything more important for the U.S. State Department to do than tackle this.
Well, Judith, we would love to bring you back regularly, because you have such an incredible background, given that you were at the EPA and you explain all of this so well. So thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Judith Enck is visiting professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.